More and more jobs are asking employees to have some knowledge of computer programming. Yet fewer women are in coding than were in the 1980s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll talk with the director of a new documentary about the societal forces that discourage women from entering computer science, the consequences this has for society, and how this might begin to change for the better. And we will welcome your input. We will welcome your questions. Are you a woman in computer science? Did you once contemplate it and then change your mind? What do you think it would take to get more women doing computer programming? And why does this even matter? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Robin Hauser Reynolds. She is director and producer of documentary films. Her most recent documentary is Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. And Code had its Wisconsin premiere in Madison earlier this month, sponsored by the Madison Chamber of Commerce. And that's how it came to our attention. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. So you yourself, you're not a computer programmer, but your daughter once thought she would major in the field. What happened?
Well, that's right. I'm always very clear to say that I'm not a woman in tech. I'm a woman that made a film about women in tech, or the lack of women in tech. My daughter was studying computer science in college, and she's always been academically competent and confident also. And she called home with more and more frequency and began to say, "Mom, it's really weird. There's only one other woman in the class. I just don't feel like I belong. They all know so much more than I do." You know, then she used to start calling home saying, I'm failing out of the class. I said, you know, why don't you go talk to the professor? That doesn't seem right. And, you know, what was interesting about it was when she spoke with the professor, he said, well, actually, you're in the top third of your class. You're doing fine. But that's a perception often that women have in the classroom dominated is the strong word, but that is when they're the minority in the classroom, especially in computer science, because by the time you get even to an entry-level class in college, most men are much more familiar with the fundamentals and basics of coding because they've been gaming for so long. And women don't have that advantage. So my daughter eventually dropped out, and not of college, but of the class. Yeah.
Right. Well, when you corrected yourself when you said dominated, that class was dominated by men.
That's right. I mean, I'm careful to say in this instance, when we're talking about just a 101, or actually my daughter got to her third or fourth level of computer science class, but I don't think it's an intentional message that men are sending at that level in college. I think they're super enthusiastic about their knowledge. They haven't been able to take more than maybe one or two classes in high school, most of these men, because you know, maybe they took the AP class, but there's not, in most high schools, there's not a lot of computer science class even being offered. And so they're really excited about sharing their knowledge, about finally being able to learn in that sort of an atmosphere. And unfortunately, that enthusiasm comes across sometimes as intimidating to the women in the class that are just catching, that's just coming up to speed and understanding what computer science is.
Oh, yeah. And I guess I was thinking just in sheer numbers, if she was only one of two in the class, that's how big is the gender gap in the computer science fields?
And less than 18% are women.
Yeah. And what kind of jobs are we talking about when we're talking about computer engineering?
Well, so software engineering or computer, I'd say engineering-related jobs in the computer science field they're growing three times faster than we're able to produce computer science majors. So, and that's just if you're comparing the number of graduates out of colleges compared to the jobs. The jobs are plentiful. They're lucrative. In many parts of the United States, you can start off $85,000 to $90,000 a year if you know how to code in a couple different languages. So there are a lot of jobs out there, and they're excellent jobs. But people of color and women aren't pursuing them. And a lot of people like to blame this on the pipeline. But honestly, the pipeline's not really the only issue.
And what do we mean by the pipeline?
So the pipeline would be the educational facilities that help educate. I mean, this is certainly one of the problems. We need to bring computer science into the classroom much, much earlier so that girls and boys have the same opportunity to learn at an early age. And it's not just, a lot of educators will say, well, we just can't fit in one more class. You know, is it a science? Is it a language? Is it a math? And the truth is that it really should be incorporated into lots of different classrooms, into the curriculum, you know, across the field of subjects. Mm-hmm. Because it really, when you think about it, code is at the base of pretty much everything we do these days. It's in our purses, it's in our backpacks, right? It's in our iPads and our smartphones. It's the navigation system in your car. It's in the hospitals. It's on, you know, runs the app that you're controlling to see how fast you're riding your bike or running, you know, your GPS system. I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah. And if you say it's not just just a pipeline problem. What is the what else is it?
I think probably the biggest problem that we have that is deterring women and people of color is the stereotype of a computer science engineer. So the stereotype of a programmer to most people is really, I mean, it is the national stereotype, and in many ways the international stereotype of a computer science engineer is a white male, someone who's somewhat antisocial, maybe wearing glasses and a hoodie and sitting in the basement eating stale pizza and drinking Red Bull, right? It's has this image of being very solitary, that maybe you're not athletic, maybe you're not social, and that's really wrong. Certainly there are people that follow that stereotype, that fit that stereotype, but that is not what you need to be in order to be a computer science engineer. And in the film that we made, we really made an effort to find women who are in incredibly creative roles, and at the base of their job is computer science engineering, for example, software engineering. For example, Danielle Feinberg at Pixar, whose team, she's been there for almost 19 years now, and Danielle's team is in charge of lighting for photography, they call it, in animation. For instance, her team wrote the code that controls the way Meredith's hair bounces in the film Brave, or the way light shines off of a school of fish in Finding Nemo. So that's amazingly creative, right? That's really
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, it is. And so by showing that this is a cool and fun and not you know, I don't know, it's not the stereotype, this would encourage more women and minorities to get in the field?
Oh, well, I think absolutely, especially for women. I mean, when we're talking about getting more women in, if they see how, for example, code can be used to design fashion, or how code is used in medicine, how code is, it can be collaborative. There's a company called Pivotal that does a lot of what's called pairing, which is where you sit at a desk with another person and you have mirror displays in front of you and you're working together to write code. I think that when people understand that there's lots of different ways that code can be creative, can be collaborative, I think that's much more of attractive to women. But of course, now the other big problem is role models. When you ask a woman or a girl to name a female scientist, most of them are hard-pressed to come up with even one name. Maybe they've studied Marie Curie, but other than that, they have a very difficult time. So we don't have a lot of role models, unfortunately. And the old adage, you cannot be what you cannot see, is really true here in computer science. And then that goes down to our pop culture and Hollywood and their responsibility or their role in this whole thing. When do we see women in leadership roles? And when they began to put women in leadership roles in being lawyers or being detectives on television, the number of women applying them and pursuing those careers increased dramatically.
Yeah. And what about maybe women getting involved in tech, getting involved in these fields, but not staying with them, like your daughter with her studies?
Well, right. So, I mean, women do self-select themselves out. A lot of women drop off, don't manage to just even stay through college because they are feeling that they don't belong. It's something called ambient belonging, when they walk into a classroom that's male-dominated, or when they have a hard time, it's always assumed that they're going to be partnered with the one other woman in the class, or they can't find a partner in class to do a problem set or something, or a string of code. I mean, that makes it difficult. So you're going to need a tough skin to get through studying computer science in college if you're a woman. Some schools have done an amazing job with rectifying this. Harvey Mudd, for example, Carnegie Mellon. These are schools that have made a big effort, and UC Berkeley. They've made a big effort to make women feel more comfortable in the classroom. And that's helped. It's helped retaining the numbers. But the bigger issue, really, what happens is retaining women in the workforce. So if you manage to pursue your love for computer science as a woman, and you make it through college, and you end up in a startup in the workforce, then you're going to have to deal with sexism. You're going to have to deal with being part of a male-dominated industry, you know, at work every single day. And a lot of it's not necessarily sexism the way we've known it from, say, Mad Men, you know, the 1950s era, but it's microaggressions. It's, women describe it as death by a thousand cuts. It's going to work every single day, proving that you're worthy of being there, that you're there for merit. It's letting a lot of stuff roll off your back, whether it's pornography that's going around in the inner channels of the, you know, communication channels, whether it's just having to listen to the banter that's going on at the engineering desk. It's not easy.
Is the sexism the product or the cause of the lack of women?
Both. I think that when there are a few women, and it's just, say, a team of engineers, of guys, I don't necessarily think it's always blatant. Of course, sometimes it is, very much so, but I don't think it's always blatant sexism. I think they just sort of still have the fraternity mentality, and they have come out of college, and they're young, and they're used to acting a certain way around each other. And if there isn't a woman or someone at the team at the desk with them, then I don't think they even notice their behavior or how it could marginalize women. And when I've had, you know, question and answer after showing the film, it's really interesting, because several times I've had men stand up and say, you know, I'm guilty of this. You're right, I'm guilty of it. And it wasn't until we brought a woman onto the team that I really noticed how this could sort of objectify her or marginalize her or be difficult for her. A lot of software engineers will say to me, I never even thought about this until I had a daughter. And a question that I ask the audience often when there are a lot of men in the theater is, you know, how many of you have daughters, and then how many of you would encourage your daughter to go into the industry right now as you know it? And they all put their hands down. Well, so they understand.
Yeah, we will talk about how we might encourage more change and address this shortage of women in tech, women in software, engineering, computer engineering jobs. We're wondering what's behind this gender gap. We'll talk more about why it matters and what can be done about it. And we will welcome your questions and your experiences. Are you a woman in computer science? Would you, if you are a man in computer science, encourage your daughter to go into this field? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Robin Hauser Reynolds is the producer-director of the documentary Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with the producer-director of the recent documentary, Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. The gender gap in computer sciences, the shortage of female computer science people. What's behind this? What can be done about it? Why does it matter? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Manna in Madison has a personal story or experience to share. Hi, Manna.
Hi.
You work in computer science.
I am a female in computer science, yes.
Yes, go ahead and tell us what it's like.
Okay, actually, there is a lot that we can do in this area. First thing first, I think we need to bring awareness that this area just fits women, life-work balance, and it's so diverse that every woman can find something fun to do to stick with. The most important thing that I want to address is that it's mostly male-dominant area, and we need women leader in this area to address the problem like this show that I appreciate. We need women leader to bring awareness first to peer male computer scientists. They absolutely discriminate towards females. Students in academia and also in industry. So my point is that we need women leaders to make that move, to bring that movement out.
Yeah, so we need more women leaders in the field, Robin.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree 100%. Women need to be hired, women need to be paid, and women need to be promoted. And if you have more women in leadership, then it's going to be easier to bring more women in. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, she, I guess, was expressing that there is definitely discrimination going on. But it sounded like she was also saying that there were so many jobs there that women would love to have.
Well, that's the point. There are so many jobs in 4.5 years. So one of the things we haven't addressed is why does this matter? Mm-hmm. In 4.5 years, by the year 2020. There will be 1 million unfilled computer science-related jobs in the United States alone. So 1.4 million jobs and only 400,000 computer scientists. We cannot fill these jobs. So it's a big issue. It's not just, you know, a moral issue or a gender issue or an ethnicity issue. It's an economic issue, and it's a serious one. And if we can't fill our own jobs, we're going to have to ship them overseas or bring people in.
Well, I'm still going to bring up Steve on Facebook says this very sarcastically, and OMG, he writes, we must do something. As though
well,
this,
there you go. There you go. There's the attitude right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is very dismissive and like, who cares if there's a gender gap in this? Well, why can't all these gazillion jobs be filled by the men who want them? Is what Steve might say.
Well, even there aren't enough men, so there aren't enough people to fill these jobs. Right? There will be a million. It's not just that we're missing half the population. There aren't enough men to fill these jobs either. So we need more men in engineering as well, in software engineering. But let's talk about what does diversity add? Like, I'm a firm believer that diversity equals innovation. You know, there are Angry Bird and Snapchat are fabulous successes. But do they really serve, you know, the greatest breadth of humanity? And if you're a 25, 27-year-old dropout from Stanford, how broad is your perspective on what the world needs in terms of, you know, a new app? And yeah, you know, I'm being edgy. I know I'm getting myself into a little bit of trouble with some people right now. I'm not saying that they haven't created amazing apps and things that are needed around the world. But the truth is that if you broaden the diversity on your team, you're going to come up with ideas and products that serve a greater breadth of humanity. So how about realizing that people need, that kids need a safe way to get home, in the inner city. There was a really brilliant app that was made that helped a kid navigate his way home if there's police activity in the streets where he lives. How about finding clean drinking water? There's a lot of things that are out there, apps that can serve, rather than, you know, where is the yuppie going to get his next meal?
Yeah. Did Did a woman or a member of a minority group develop those diverse apps?
Yes. But it, you know, it can be socioeconomic diversity. It can be a man too. Listen, I am not an advocate for all female teams. I'm saying that diversity, a diverse group, is going to, I mean, it's actually a known fact. It's scientifically studied that if you add a woman to a group, the collective IQ of that group rises, productivity rises, profitability rises. So it's the benefit to your company also by having a woman on the team.
Let's go to Jenny in Green Bay. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
Yes, I understand you have been a programmer for what, 20 years?
Well, between 15 and 20 years. And I guess my comment was just that I was a little bit surprised to be hearing this perspective because I've never actually felt in any way discriminated against or that there was any sexism. I'm just kind of mentally trying to do a bit of a count, and I think about a third to a quarter of our departments, our IT department, is female. And I just don't see people being treated any differently based on whether they're male or female, and advancement opportunities seem to be the same. The really talented females do very well, and we've got some really sharp women who, both the males and females in the department, go to them regularly for, you know, guidance and direction because they're very talented and very smart. Well, I was just a little surprised.
Well, I'm glad you called.
I'd love to know where she works because that's obviously a company that's maybe there's women in upper management or something, but obviously that's fabulous, and I it's reassuring.
Yeah, and actually the previous company I worked for as well, there were women in management, and it also seemed to be the same sort of culture. So I guess at least even if there are problems out there, I can definitely assure you that there are places where it's not like that.
And that is, you said a third to a half are women at your company?
No, about a quarter to a third, I'm guessing.
Okay. Do you want to tell us where you work or not?
I work for Ameriprise Auto and Home Insurance.
Yeah. All right. So maybe certain places can be models for others, Robin?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, there are success stories. In the film, we use Etsy as an example. Etsy was, you know, it's a startup. It's a little bit beyond a startup now, but when it started up, it definitely had more men in software engineering than women. And they made a big effort to rectify the situation, and by diversifying their interview panels, by recruiting, you know, from and supporting a group that was teaching women and minorities to code, they were able to increase their numbers. And they went in 8 years from 3% to 30%. Women in software engineering. And, of course, it's always easier to recruit more women once you have women in the engineering department and then to retain them when women are happy and when they feel supported.
Yeah. We are talking with Robin Hauser Reynolds. She is a director and producer of documentary films, and her most recent documentary is Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. And This documentary dips into the history of women in computer science and also talks about the current gender gap that's going on in computer science, the shortage of women as software engineers. We're talking about why this is the case and what can be done about it and why it matters. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So we have fewer women in coding now than were in coding in the 1980s. So what, it's getting worse, Robin?
Yeah, that was probably the most shocking thing that I learned in making this film. 1986, I believe the number is, well, somewhere right in the mid-1980s, there was almost 40% women. And the numbers have dropped off pretty drastically since then.
Yeah. Our first caller, a man, I believe her name was she mentioned a little bit of work-life balance. And I'm wondering if I know there's a company in the Madison area that makes a healthcare software for, and that it's known that people put in really long hours, really, really long hours. They get compensated well, but you know, traveling all over the place, 80 hours a week or more, working, and there's very little family time. Could that be a big reason for this gender gap?
I think there's no doubt that women being the primary caregiver to their children is part of the reason, but this would be part of the reason across all industries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that there are more women that drop off, 10 years into computer science than they do in other industries? So just by knowing that that's a true fact, it's sort of, yes, it's a problem. It's a problem across all industries. We need better childcare. It's a whole different issue, a whole different documentary likely. But why is it that in computer science, women drop off at a much faster rate? And the reason that they will give you exit interviews and everything will tell you they just get tired of the microaggressions. They get tired of feeling like they don't really belong. They get tired of having their voice not be heard in a meeting, of their code not being, you know, respected the same way. I mean, there are stories. They're pretty fascinating. There's a story of a man who was an excellent coder, well-respected, published a lot to open source. He went through a sex change and moved states, and as a woman, got an engineering job because, you know, she is very talented and a great coder. And she says that it's just unbelievable how now she feels like she can't have her voice heard, that her code isn't respected, that she has to almost submit it with her initials so that people don't know she's a woman and then taken seriously. And is there a little bit of, you know, do you have to account for the fact that some people maybe just have a more difficult time relating to a transgender person? Yeah, perhaps that's part of it. But I thought that was a really interesting example. It wasn't one we used in the film because it came to us later, but I just thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are biases, right? We all have our biases. And if the bias there is that women don't have what it takes to be a good computer scientist. And when you interview a man who, you know, is willing to openly talk about this and knows something about computer science engineering, he'll say, of course women can be as good at coding as men can. And in the film, we interviewed two brain scientists, a man and a woman, and asked them if there was any innate difference in the brain that would make a man a better coder than a woman. And the answer by both of them was no. You know, experience is what shapes the brain. And as long as you're given, you know, you're comparing the same IQ and you give them the same opportunity to learn, the same experience to learn, both men and women have equal ability to learn computer science and to be as skilled at it.
Let's take a call from Patricia in Madison. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. This really hits home for me. I go back many, many decades, and by my fourth year of high school math class, I was one of three girls in the class, and of course, the fellows would say, what are you doing in here? You're not going to be an engineer. Then I had 1.5 years of college calculus, but was never guided into being an engineer or an accountant. But when I was 50 years old and Madison's Truex campus opened up, I returned to school and earned a 2-year degree in programming, working in the field for 21 years, and I loved it. I finally found my niche in the professional world. There were less than 30% of women where I worked. I didn't think there was a discrimination there. You would hear talk amongst the male counterparts sometimes of their own type of language. But I feel the characteristics for a woman to be in the field, they have to think logically, be creative, attend to detail, have a good memory, be a good communicator, and be persistent.
Well, way to go, Patricia. In her 50s, she decided to do this, and now you told my producer you're in your 70s right now.
Late 70s, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, bless you.
I am retired now.
Well, so how are we going to fix this gender gap, Patricia?
Well, to say a software engineer, to say a coder, a computer scientist, those are all different fields and different levels. And I guess I would advise, like I did, go to a technical college and kind of introduce yourself to the field. And any of these others is just getting deeper into the computer fields then.
Yeah. Well,
they are not all the same.
Right. Right.
No, that's right. That's right. That's right. They're not all the same. And then I've been using different terms, sort of switching them around. But that's right. There are different fields and they're different. But so let's just talk about, the ability to know a computer science language and to program. But I think that that's absolutely right. And what is interesting is that one reason that this could be in some ways a great equalizer in some ways is because you don't necessarily need to have a four-year degree to become a software engineer. To learn a computer science language, you can go, you could study it online if you're disciplined. You can go to a two-year college, more like a trade school, or you can just get involved in one of these, Hackbright Academy, there's so many of them. And we have a website that we started called shescoding.org, and it's a resource of so many different organizations and groups that are teaching people to code, whether you're a man or a woman. And I think that that's what's interesting about this as well, is it doesn't really matter where you went to school. If you have an aptitude to learn a computer science language and you can apply that, then really you can get a job pretty much, anywhere.
We are talking with Robin Hauser Reynolds, director and producer of Code, Debugging the Gender Gap, which looks into the gender gap in computer sciences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about why fewer women are in computer coding or programming today than they were in the 1980s, and what forces are discouraging women from entering consumer or computer science fields, and what consequences that might have for society. We also are discussing how to change things for the better. What are the solutions? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Neil in Madison. Hello, Neil.
Hello. I've been doing software and hardware since the mid-70s. And I have a couple of comments here. The first is that while I believe that, yes, we should be teaching principles of programming earlier, it's not because it's all around us, but because, rather like learning math, it changes how you think, and that's useful. But I think that saying we should teach it earlier just because it's all around us, you could equally say we should be teaching the internal combustion engine because vehicles are all around us. But my second point is that I've been around long enough where I've watched new graduates coming through the doors for decades now, and the composition and personalities have been changing. In the 70s, you got people who were mostly very much into mathematics, because computer science as it exists today really wasn't around then. You got, in the mid-80s, you had guys who'd grown up in the 60s, when they were young children, NASA was the thing. Being an engineer was cool, and they went after that. Since then, it's changed. there's a particular segment of the population that tends to go after whatever is perceived as the quick way to get money. Late 80s, with all the Wall Street stuff, a lot of people went into business just because they thought they could get rich quick. And that's somewhat what's happening with computer science now. And that particular segment is not driven by any love of computer science. It's driven for love of wealth and whatever variety of power they can get. And those people are pretty unpleasant. So it's not surprising that that some workplaces have gotten a bit nastier because that segment has entered into computer science.
Thank you, Neil. I know you have some more to say, too, but we got lots of other callers. So let's get rid of those nasty ones, Robin.
Yeah, no, I agree with Neil. I think that's really interesting. I don't think that that's necessarily the reason that they dropped off in the mid-80s, although I do think he's absolutely right about the changing sort of personification of the, you know, the stereotype. And, you know, having gone from the computer nerd to sort of the hacker, right? That's in the 80s. That's when sort of it became kind of a cool thing. Wow, look what we can do with code, break into the, you know, Federal Reserve. And a lot of the pop culture along the time, War Games and a lot of the films were talking about that. And then, yes, I mean, there is the get-rich-quick sort of mentality now, and especially because a lot of these, you know, kids that have done it, like Mark Zuckerberg and stuff, are dropouts from college. So that is intriguing. Of course, you know, there are the unicorns out there, but I think that he has a point, and it's well taken.
I have to ask, what are the unicorns?
Well, in other words, I mean they're rare. They're very rare.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay. So I know actually Neil was going to bring up, and I will instead that the CEO of the software company Epic in Madison, actually in Verona, I guess. And maybe because you came to Madison, perhaps you're familiar with Epic.
Yeah, I didn't meet Judy. I would have loved to have met her.
Yeah.
I think she's certainly a role model. I think it's women like Judy that have been so successful in this that actually I wish that she got out more to speak publicly about her success. And I know that she's, from what I know of her, a very modest woman. But it's women like Judy who have done have been so successful in. As an engineer, that if more girls knew about her, I think that they would be really inspired to get involved and to get into the field.
Yeah, the CEO of Epic is Judy Faulkner, and I took a tour of the Epic compound campus just recently, and it's just outstanding. So let's go next though to Laura in Milwaukee. Hi, Laura.
Hi, my sister. And she works for a large firm, and they have a lot of different factories. And what she was finding is that other young people would come in, and she'd be training them. And it's on the computer systems for the different factories, and they have different factories all over the country. And she'd be training these people, young, mostly, almost all men. And she's an older woman, and they'd be getting paid more than her. You understand?
Yeah. So they're getting the promotions. They're getting paid more than her. Her sister is training these guys who are getting paid more. Robin.
Well, there's that, right? So there's the pay gap, and this is also a complicated issue. There are a lot of companies will say, and this is true in a lot of cases, that women and men for the same job are hired at the same salary. What happens then as they stay in the workforce is that they are promoted and given raises at different rates. And part of that is the fact that men actually ask for raises more often than women do. Men believe that they deserve a raise more than women. Women judge themselves a little bit more harshly. They're harder on themselves in terms of, you know, believing that they deserve things. And so that's something that I think is really important to instill in our daughters and in our sisters and female coworkers, is to trust that they are worthy of a raise and to ask for it, to put themselves out there. There was an interesting study done that showed that if there were 10 qualifications you need for a job, and a woman feels like she needs to have 80 to 90% of those to apply for the job, whereas a man will apply if he has 50 to 60% of those qualifications. So it's just, there's a difference. You know, there are certainly differences in our genders and our sexes. But I think that women need to ask for raises more often, and that will help the pay differential.
Karen emails, it's not the pipeline's fault that women aren't in coding. It's women who are afraid to tackle their dreams in spite of being a minority. I am a half Asian female that was in the active duty military for 8 years, and I am in tech now. There is nothing standing in the way of women being in tech other than their own fears, or dare I say, pandering parents. Oh, she took a quick turn there. so it's women should just do it.
Well, I do think that that women should just do it, but I disagree that there's nothing standing in their way. I mean, I think if a woman is determined enough to learn to code and can put tough enough skin on and put, you know, build a little bit of armor around her and let certain microaggressions and things and being the minority roll off her back, then absolutely. There are very successful women out there. Look at our CTO of the United States of America, Megan Smith. She came from Google X. She's brilliant. She's a great role model. She's made it all the way to the White House. So yes, women can do it if they build up a tough skin and can handle some of these. But I think that there, and I agree that it's not just a pipeline issue, as we've already talked about. You know, there's an interesting thing here, another point that says that universities aren't necessarily incentivized to increase their computer science departments either, right? Because most computer science departments in school are filled. They're filled by men predominantly, but they're already full. And it's an enormous financial burden to increase that department. And even if there's, you know, you can't always reallocate or your resources, right? You can't redirect resources if they've already been given to the English department and you're finding that there aren't as many English majors. You can't just say, well, let's reallocate that over to computer science. You have tenured teachers in different places. So it's a problem that the universities are also having if there are more and more demand, and if suddenly they have 50% more demand because women are coming through in stronger numbers, which ideally is what you want to have, a balanced classroom. It means that somebody's not going to get into those classes because making a bigger computer science department is not necessarily something that the universities are incentivized to do. It'd be very expensive for them to do that.
Karen mentioned she's Asian. We haven't talked much about racial minorities in tech. Are there different solutions for that problem?
Well, you know, the one area of the world that doesn't seem to be having a gender issue in this field is Southeast Asia. And interestingly, in India, there seem to be almost 50% of the women are studying computer science in school. And Southeast Asia, it would be very normal. China has many women engineers. In India, less women are actually going into the workforce as software engineers. They're studying, but then they don't, and that has to do with, that's a cultural issue. It has to do with sort of having merit in order to be marriageable and that type of thing. A lot of Indian women are coming over to the United States to actually work. But I think that, beyond the white male, I think the next biggest demographic in software engineering in the United States would be an Asian male. But talk about blacks. Blacks are less than 6% in the field right now.
Yeah.
man or woman. I mean, this is a lot of the issues that we've talked about are equally difficult for a black male.
Right. And so are there, so the, you're dealing mostly with the solutions for the gender gap, but are there, you know, similar efforts that should be made to encourage, you know, more black men in the field?
No, I mean, absolutely. Our focus was, because it's more my style as director, I believe that you pick a topic and you drill deep rather than spreading it too thin. Yeah. So I am the first one to admit that this is an issue also for Latino and African-American men. This is not uniquely an issue for women to feel marginalized from this field. But I and so I think that a lot of it applies there as well.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just, we just weren't able to fit everything into the documentary.
Lydia and Nina is with us. Hi, Lydia.
Hi. I'm kind of thrown in a different perspective here. I actually started out in the jewelry industry and then went into information technology, where I'm now a computer programmer. And it's quite interesting because I started out with an all-male team, and it is really interesting, like how, like you said, they don't always realize how they act. And I guess now I'm quite lucky because I am working with a company where my manager is a woman and I work with other women programmers, and it's really quite an awesome company to work for. But there is a little bit of, I guess, in college, I was like one of two girls in my class, and it's just interesting.
Well, you've seen some changes along the way. You also wanted to mention there's an organization starting in the Fox Valley called Women in IT.
Yes, it's, I think, about 1 or 2 years old, but their big movement is to try and get more women in IT, and they're trying to get it started in schools and then move it up to college. And part of it also is a collaboration between the companies in the area just to try to get more women in IT. And it's quite hard to get IT teachers because of the fact that they can make more in the actual market than they can in schools. But
yeah, Lydia, and I'm sorry to jump in because we only have just about a minute or so to go. You want to quickly react, Robin, to Lydia's experience and the fact that, I guess, she's indicating in some ways that things have changed for her anyway.
Well, because Lydia was really smart to find a company where she felt welcome and she felt like she could, you know, grow, and that her merit, she was being hired on merit, and, you know, she's comfortable in her environment. And I think that's what's wonderful about, you know, if you're lucky enough to find a company where there are other women, there's women in leadership, or just other women on the engineering team, I think that without a doubt you're going to feel more supported. And that's the key, right? That's the key, is to try to find that right fit. So there are companies out there where I've talked to many different women who are content in their jobs and that have been there a while because they're at a company that cares about this issue and it's making efforts.
We have just about 30 seconds to go. Are you optimistic the gender gap will close?
Close is a big word.
No.
I believe that there are companies that care about it. I'm encouraged by the fact that it's a discussion that people are really talking about now. And I think because it's an economic issue, there are a lot of people that are looking up from their iPhones and paying attention to this. So yes, I hope that it will change.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Robin Hauser Reynolds, producer, director of the documentary Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing and directing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.